A quarter century ago, organic farmers gave themselves over to the federal government for safekeeping. Now, some among them want the head fed to be fired for selling them out to industrial interests. And so it is time to ask, is organic still organic?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1016th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kowloon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jason Strubia on the boards. Hello, Jason. I have a question for you.
Happy to be here. Shoot, Michael.
Do you eat organic foods or regular foods? What's your
Absolutely.
Preference?
Absolutely. Organic, there's no way, better way to go, sir.
Okay, fair enough. Folks, a quarter century ago, the small farmers of organic agriculture gave themselves and their industry, in effect, over to the federal government for safekeeping. The intent was to develop an official definition for organic, so all organic farmers would grow by the same rules, and all consumers of organic products would know exactly what they were buying. Consequent to this federalizing of organic food and agriculture, the industry grew like the proverbial weed, from $1 billion in 1990 to well over $30 billion here in the United States and to well over $105 billion worldwide. With so much money being made, those farmers and food manufacturers outside the walls of the National Organic Program are more than likely to feel a little bit left out and perhaps want in. And what better way to get in than by making friends with the federal gatekeeper? Today, the Cornucopia Institute, an organic industry watchdog, is asking U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack to sack the head of the National Organic Program for making significant changes to the organic rules without any public comment. This ongoing tug of war over the meaning of the word organic is having an impact on the public's perception of the word. While 71% of U.S. consumers believe organic foods are healthier than conventional foods, 51% believe organic food is simply just an excuse to get the consumers to pay more. And so we ask, is the organic industry holding to its original intent? Or is it being sold down the river to outside interests? Here to help us dig for an answer, we have Mark Castle, who is a co-founder and executive director of the Cornucopia Institute in Cornucopia, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the Food Chain, Mark.
Thank you, Michael. It's a beautiful day here in Wisconsin. It sounds like it's a nice day on the central coast of California.
Well, it's against the law for it to be anything but nice here. I mean, that's, you know, I've always...
The difference is we've got rain coming tonight, and I'm not sure you'll get that.
Well, I would trade our nice for your rain any day at this stage of the game out here. Listen, I've always wanted to drive through Cornucopia, Wisconsin. Whereabouts is it?
Well, you might... most directions you could take a ship there. It's the farthest northern post office in Wisconsin, jutting into Lake Superior.
Ah, so it's way up at the top there.
Way up at the top.
Past Green Bay, even.
Way, way north of Green Bay.
Ooh. It sounds like a very interesting countryside, and it's called Cornucopia. Any history on that term?
I don't really know. You know, that's a good question. I'll have to research that. I mean, we joke and say the town was named after our organization.
There you go. Well, you know, folks, we've had Mark come to the Food Chain Radio program, seems like about every 100 episodes of the program or so, to give us an update on the world of organic food and agriculture. Let's see, we're at 1016 now. On number 932, Mark came in and talked about organic chickens and eggs and how the federal government was trying to mess with the notion of free-range chickens. And back in 715, he came in and talked about the genetically modified alfalfa that the Monsanto was trying to spread across the land. And back in number 507, he came in and talked about greenwashed milk and how large industrial dairy farms are peddling themselves as organic when really they weren't so organic after all. And today he's here to talk about getting shed of the head fed at the National Organic Program, poor Miles McAvoy. What's wrong with Miles?
Well, the moral of the story here is be careful of what you ask for. You might actually get it. And we asked. It was kind of an unusual thing for any industry to ask the government to intervene and promulgate very tough regulation to supervise the conduct of the business. And we asked Congress to pass the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990. We, the organic community,
right.
Farmers.
25 quarter century ago.
Yeah, and it was it actually is a great piece of legislation. It was designed, as you say, to level the playing field. There were a number of different definitions of what organic food was, and there was no reciprocity. So you could go to your farmer's market and find an organic farmer. He or she may or may not practice the same as the farmer's market in the next town over, but it was pretty much impossible to make processed mass distributed organic food because no one would recognize each other. If the milk came from a farm that was certified by Certifier A and the strawberries and the yogurt came from a farm certified by Certifier B, none of them would recognize each other's standards and you couldn't put the organic label on the package. So this was a good piece of legislation. And then we handed it over to the USDA, silly us, because the USDA, it doesn't really matter, Michael, whether it's a Republican or a Democratic administration. It's really controlled by the big agribusiness lobbyists. When the bill first came up in Congress, the USDA actually lobbied against the bill. They said they did not want it to pass. They did not want the authority to regulate organics. Today, And then initially, every agribusiness and agribusiness front group, think tanks, were really attacking the credibility of organics. Today, every major big food company, be it White Wave, which was Dean Foods, General Mills, Smucker's, Kellogg's, they're all heavily invested in organics, and their campaign money and their lobbyists are corrupting the process.
And a lot of those companies are the same companies that spent big to defeat the GMO labeling laws as well. Interestingly enough, how that works. You know, Mark,
yeah, if you look at our, especially for folks in California, the companies that work to defeat Proposition 37, they're all delineated in an infographic that you could see on the right column of the cornucopia.org website. And so we give our money to brands that we trust, whether they're Cascadian Farms or Horizon Milk. They don't really put their corporate names on there. You won't see General Mills on a package of Glenmuir tomatoes or Cascadian Farm. You'll see Small Planet Foods. But then they take our profits and they stab us in our back by campaigning against GMO labeling or having their lobbyists work to water down the definition of organics in Washington.
You know, it seems to fit a pattern where wherein we little people, you know, fearful of the big people, run to the government and say, protect me. And so the government establishes rules and regulations. But when it does establish those rules and regulations, it becomes very attractive for those very big people who have the wherewithal to influence government by, you know, donating liberally to the politician's grandmother's college education fund or something like that. And then they become kind of like the gatekeepers of these rules and regulations. So it ends up that the government ends up protecting those that we ask the government to protect us from. And is that kind of what we're seeing with respect to organic agriculture?
Yes, Michael. And so I could ask the rhetorical question, why should organics be any different than all the other regulatory schemes? And the answer is because we said so. Because organics was founded as a values-based industry. And we, part of the deal, and this is getting to the crust of what the beef is we have with the USDA management, part of the deal that Congress set up was to institute the National Organic Standards Board.
Okay, you're going to have to hold it there, Mark. We just ran out of time. But when we come back, we're going to get to the crux of the issue and ask what it means for those of us who buy and those of us who grow organic foods. Is organics holding true to the original intent of the law? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at metrofarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at metrofarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at metrofarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at metrofarm.com. That's metrofarm.com.
Hey folks, guess who sells more organic food than Whole Foods? Tick, 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 tick. You're wrong. It's Costco. That giant warehouse firm now sells more organic food than Whole Foods, which is the nation's premier organic food retailer. But not anymore, I guess. $30 billion a year in organic food. It's a huge industry, and so why shouldn't the big boys get involved? They want to get involved. That's way too much money not to get involved. But is that really the original intent of the organic law, and is that organic food still organic? That's the question on the table today with Mark Castle. He, the founder, co-founder and executive director of the Cornucopia Institute up in Cornucopia, Wisconsin. Mark is the watchdog of the organic industry, and whenever the organic industry tries to get away with something, Mark is there to point the fingers, and he is pointing the fingers right now at the head fed of the National Organic Program, Miles McAvoy, who is doing some, what Mark says, is some kind of sleight of hand here to make it very easy for some very big people to participate in the organic food industry. Mark, before we get into the specifics, let's talk a little bit about how the organic law set up an industry for growth and how it did grow. The original intent, it would do what for farmers?
Well, it would create one set of standards. Back in the day, 25 plus years ago, when I was farming and certified as organic, before it was voluntary, before it was handled by the USDA, most of the certifiers in the country, as is now the law, required 3 years off of agrochemicals before you could call your produce organic. In California, your state, you had your own state law, which said that they had to be off of chemicals for 1 year. You could be farming organically 1 year, nuke the ground with herbicides the next, and then be organic again. And so they really tightened up the rules, protecting the most ethical farmers, protecting the authenticity of food. Let me interrupt 1 second here, though, with
sure.
an important message before we get into the minutiae of the organic sausage making in Washington. You know, organics is kind of become a bifurcated industry. It's not like it's all troubled, Michael. But it's really incumbent upon the consumer to do a little bit more research to make sure they're getting what they're paying for and really high-integrity food. So on one half of the equation, we've got the farmers at your local farmers market that are certified organic, the ones that have CSA farms and deliver a box of produce to your home or neighborhood every week. We've got a handful of the very finest and some very large founding companies that are still owned by not corporate entities, but the founders of the companies. And they're doing wonderful jobs. And if you go to the Cornucopia Institute website, we have scorecards that rate every brand of eggs, dairy products, soy foods, so you can know which products are coming from giant factory farms, which are that the USDA is looking the other way on, which are coming from China with kind of dubious heritage, and which are the true high-integrity, authentic brands. And it's a shame that we have to do that extra research, because that's exactly what Congress had intended to be.
That was the objective, right, was to set up a standard so that...
And prod the bad actors to get on board here.
Yeah, so that was the idea behind it all. And for consumers, by establishing that criteria, by establishing a standard, consumers would then know what they're going to get, and it would all be equal across the land. Everybody would know. So how did that all that work out?
Well, not as well as we'd like, because, again, the law is good. The standards that were promulgated after a very, very long delay by the USDA during the Bush administration, they're pretty darn solid. The enforcement is a problem. So our two biggest problems with Mr. McEvoy and the present administration in the Obama and Vilsack leadership is that, number one, they are undercutting the process that has been established for how these rules get made. Mm-hmm. So the National Organic Standards Board, Congress created to have authority over rulemaking.
Yeah, Mark, before we go there, I'd just like to kind of work our way toward there, if I might. And the federal government set up rules, and then the rules made it possible for this explosive growth. And the management of those rules is what made it possible for the explosive growth. Because as I see it, the original intent was to protect and shield organic farmers and organic consumers so that they would all have that notion that they're getting food true to the cause, as it were. And yet the industry has exploded to be so lucrative that there's a lot of temptation there. And is the domestic industry sufficient to supply that demand?
Well, no. Right now we're getting a lot of imports. What the corporations have done is found it expedient to partner with countries like China, India, Kazakhstan, former Soviet bloc countries that can undercut the price of U.S. farmers. And these are countries that have endemic level of commercial fraud. So I'm not sure why we should trust them. But, you know, the growth isn't bad, Michael. Having large companies involved isn't necessarily bad. The regulations are scale neutral. What's bad is if the USDA looks the other way and lets these corporations cut corners to basically cheapen the working definition of organic. That's what we all as citizens and owners of the organic label should stand up against.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because you're kind of like, you're the one that's really doing the industry the big favor, as I see it, by pointing fingers and saying, you know, what you're doing here is going to destroy the perception of what organic foods is. I have in my hand here an article by Steve Savage talking about how Canadian egg producers, organic egg producers, are importing corn from India contaminated with aflatoxin, which is one of the most cancerous substances known to man, and the corn is contaminated with aflatoxin, but it's organic. So the egg producers can feed their chickens this organic corn from India, and it's organic. And so those kinds of things, I think, are the reason behind this disparity of public opinion, wherein 71% of the people, of the consumers, believe that organic food is better for people to eat. On the other hand, 51% think it's a kind of a fraud.
Well, I eat an all-organic diet, Michael. I started my career in corporate agribusiness 40 years ago with the International Harvester Tractor Company. And really, most farms were family farms back then, and many were organic. And it took pesticide poisoning for my wake-up call. And so we really don't have a good alternative to turn to. We need to fight for the credibility of organics because we know what's in conventional food.
Right.
And we know that there are, you know, all the testing today, even with our problems, point to better nutrition and a much lower load of toxic agrochemicals in our bloodstream if we eat organic food. It just becomes a little bit more challenging because we have to do the work. See caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. And instead of the USDA doing the heavy lifting, a public charity like Cornucopia is. We have colleagues in this fight, and certainly many and many of the ethical business people and farmers who have a stake in making sure that, as you say, that the golden goose is not doubled. This has been a lucrative industry. Profit's not a dirty word, but it has to be authentic and earned the old-fashioned way, not through lobbying and fancy public relations work.
And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back, the lobbying, the fancy public relations work, and how you talk the federal gatekeeper into letting you in. What's the secret? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Mark Castell, Cornucopia Institute. Do you believe organic is still organic and worth your extra money? 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, you and I are spending $30 billion a year on organic food. We love our organic food, do we not? And that's not all. A National Academy of Sciences study says that organic farming is 22 to 35% more profitable for farmers than conventional farming. So there's an industry you want to be a part of. It's a lot of money, and everybody wants it. So what if you're not quite eligible to fit in? Well, what are you going to do? You're going to have to, you know, donate a few million dollars to some politician's grandmother's college fund, perhaps, and then get an introduction to one of the federal gatekeepers. And I guess that's pretty much what the subject of today's show is what is happening to those federal gatekeepers of the National Organic Program. Mark Castell will tell us. He's the co-founder of the Cornucopia Institute and a chief finger pointer, our watchdog for those of us who are fans of organic food. And right now, Mark is pointing his fingers at Miles McAvoy, who is the head of the National Organic Program, and saying you're cheating or you're stretching the rules or you're not doing what we need to be done, so you need to go. That's an awful big accusation to throw at the head Fed, Mark.
Well, first, let me invite your, we don't want to get mad. We want to organize here and make a change. So let me invite your listeners to go to the website, cornucopia.org, C-O-R-N-U-C-O-P-I-A, and either join as a member. You can make a donation, but we have a free electronic newsletter. We'll tell you how you can engage to try to pressure this in the right direction. So the organic law is pretty good. It says that unlike conventional agriculture, you can't confine your animals in large buildings or feedlots. All organic livestock must have access to the outdoors. Organic ruminants, like dairy cows, they need to have access to pasture. So how is it that Mr. McAvoy can look at the same pictures, go to cornucopia.org, view the flyover photo gallery at the top right-hand corner? We flew last summer over 14 different giant CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, industrial livestock operations. Some of these had as many as 18,000 dairy cows. a million birds on these, quote, organic farms. There were no birds outside. Zero, Michael, in any of these installations. The most that these dairy farms had, and I use farms in a very loose term, is 10% of their cattle out on grass. Most of them are in giant feedlots, filthy, manure-laden feedlots. That's a violation of the law. When Mr. McAvoy, and this wasn't the first time we filed formal legal complaints, when he looked at these photos, they decided, well, it was only a snapshot in time. It didn't show anything. Well, when the inspectors that the USDA sanctions go out on a given day, when they make an appointment to inspect the farms, that's only a snapshot in time, too. But in addition to these photos, we sent other days with satellite imagery. We sent state filings that showed they had way too many cows for the amount of acreage they had. And they're still unwilling to investigate these. So,
Mark, isn't this all
responsible?
Isn't this all a question of economies of scale? You know, you think about if you have like 100 dairy cows, or if you have 15,000 dairy cows. If you have 100 dairy cows, it's going to cost you a lot of money to donate to that politician's grandmother's college education fund. It's going to cost you per cow. But if you have 15,000 cows, it's fairly easy for you to donate and get the rules changed. Isn't that what's going on here?
Well, the big guys have a front group. It's called the Organic Trade Association, or the OTA. And it's really controlled by big agribusiness, not so much farmers. These giant factory farms,
they have the economies of scale to buy that influence.
Sure. Yeah, so an outfit called Aurora Dairy, you mentioned Costco, they have a series of giant industrial dairies in Texas and Colorado. They own their own processing plant, what we call vertical integration. And they ship their milk to Portland, Maine, and to Portland, Oregon, to undercut real organic farmers. And their milk's available in Costco and Walmart and Target and some of the big box grocery chains. And that's why your readers need to look at that organic dairy scorecard on the Cornucopia Institute website, because that will, in every market, you can buy just wonderful milk. You know, in California, outfits like Strauss or Wallaby, or in the Bay Area, Clover Stornetta. These are companies that partner with family farmers. You don't have to say, the heck with organics. You can say, I'm going to make sure that I reward the true heroes, the real the real farmers and their ethical partners, not the companies that are putting them at a competitive disadvantage.
But if the only criteria is just the word organic, then the idea would be of some would be to tamp down the rulemaking and the governance and the bureaucracy to get away with as little of or what it means to be organic as possible, so you can make as much money as possible. So the influencing, I would suspect, would be very intense on somebody like Mr. McAvoy to be amenable to bending the rules a little bit. Look, we're honest people. We're just big, but we're nice folks. So why don't you let us in? Why don't you, you know, be nice to us? And
well, that's what's going on, Michael. And so this National Organic Standards Board that Congress said would be made up of four farmers and a certifier and an independent scientist has been stacked with a bunch of corporate shills. So there's a woman sitting in a, quote, farmer seat who is a full-time employee at Driscoll Strawberries. Driscoll's doesn't grow any organic strawberries. They contract with other large growers to do their growing. So this woman doesn't, quote, own or operate an organic farm as Congress intended. So Mr. McAvoy and the leadership at the USDA is really selling out the values of the organic industry and undermining the laws that Congress passed. And incidentally, you don't have to take the Cornucopia Institute's word or Mark Castell on whether they're violating the will of Congress. The two chief authors of the Organic Foods Production Act, Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont and Congressman Peter DeFazio, I think he's from Oregon, they both wrote Secretary Tom Vilsack at the USDA saying that the rule changes that McEvoy has pushed through without, as you say, any public hearings or input are a violation of the will of Congress.
Well, let's look at some of the things that Mr. McEvoy is doing. He is trying to eliminate the sunset provisions on organic materials. What does that mean?
Well, the Congress said that the National Organic Standards Board will review every synthetic and non-organic ingredient that is allowed in organic. So if you want organic cupcakes, we need a leveling agent like baking powder. There's no such thing as organic baking powder. So they need to review that, make sure it's safe for human health, safe for the environment, and essential for organic use. And it is, and that's fine. But every 5 years, you have to look at these synthetics again to make sure that maybe somebody hasn't come up with an organic alternative, or maybe published peer-reviewed research hasn't indicated it could be a health factor like carrageenan that comes from seaweed.
You got to hold that thought, Mark. We just ran up against the break here. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, Mark Castle, and you, 831-479-1080. Are organics organic? Right back. Well, folks, I have in my hand here the national list of allowed and prohibited substances in organic foods. Holy smokes. You can put a lot of things in organic foods that I didn't think you could. You can put in magnesium sulfate. You can put in potassium iodide. You could put in acidified sodium chloride. Hundreds of things. Holy smokes. And Mark Castle says that the National Organic Program originally intended for all of these elements to be sunsetted every 5 years or terminated and then reapproved. But just like that, the rules were changed. How were the rules changed on the sunsetting, Mark?
Well, so when this originated and the way it's been practiced for a number of years, every 5 years, the board would have to look at the material and vote again. And just like putting it on the list initially, they would have to have a two-thirds vote, which Congress mandated, to put something back on the list. And the two-thirds vote, Congress really wanted, and we all do, to have more of a consensus about the safety of these materials. So the industry and the Organic Trade Association started losing some of these fights. We published a report called the Organic Watergate, which was kind of, and it's available on our website. It's kind of a wake-up call on how this was being manipulated. And so a vote came up to reapprove at sunset the use of, dig this, antibiotics on tree fruits like peach, like pears and apples to control fire blight. But the fact is that there were natural ways to control fire blight that were compatible with organics. And the board removed them. They didn't get back on there. So what Mr. McEvoy did in the dark of night, presumably sanctioned by the political appointees at the USDA, is they changed it. Now, to take a material off the list, you need a two-thirds vote. So we'll hardly ever get a material off the list that's at all controversial. I like to say, forget sunset. We're now in the land of the midnight sun.
So it's
material stay on the list forever.
So it's kind of like the opposite of sunsetting it. Once it's on forever, and that's that, and only God could remove it.
Well, the industry, you know, we've removed a few things since then that the industry said, well, we don't really need anymore. But when they really want something, if that vote for antibiotics came up today, it would have lost based on the voting percentages. We would still have farmers this year spraying oxytetracycline and streptomycin on tree food, and here's the bottom line why cornucopia scientists decided we should object to it. We could find, according to published research, residues of the antibiotics in the apples. Nobody buys organic apples, think they're feeding kids antibiotics. That's why we need consumers to go to the cornucopia website, sign up for that free newsletter, get engaged.
Get engaged.
The organic label.
Other things the National Organic Program have approved, nanotechnology. Excuse me? What's organic about nanotechnology?
They did actually approve that. The board, the National Organic Standards Board, said it should be flatly prohibited. And Mr. McAvoy and the USDA has decided that they will have the board look at the nanomaterials with food ingredients or packaging with nano submicroscopic particles on a case-by-case basis. So they've opened the door to allow companies, agribusinesses, to petition the use for these things, where the board said, bottom line, just like the prohibition of antibiotics, genetic engineering, nanotech should be just flatly prohibited from organic use.
And here's the one that really stumps me, and that is hydroponics. How can organic hydroponic foods be organic? Because they're not even grown in the soil.
Well, that's what the National Organic Standards Board said. But once again, the USDA, Mr. McAvoy, and the leadership there are ignoring the will of the people. The organic farming is about, and it's in the law, about building soil fertility. After all, that's how we get nutrients in our food, is with nutritious soil. And hydroponics means growing in water with foam and plastic materials, and then giving all natural and synthetic nutrients. And the bottom line is that that might not be bad. It might be better than buying conventional produce, but it's not going to have the wide range of micronutrients that soil-grown plants have. And so, again, we're just basically subverting the democratic process. The National Organic Standards Board takes testimony from organic farmers and consumers. They weigh public input. They debate amongst themselves. And then they say that organic food should only be grown in soil, and the USDA ignores them.
Another thing you mentioned earlier in that the National Organic Program is not holding up miscreants, but rather hiding them so that they can kind of like get away with whatever it is they're doing.
Holding up what, Michael? I missed.
Miscreants. Organic farming or organic farmers that that bend the rules and cheat instead of holding them up.
We have a secretive process. Not only are they not doing enough enforcement, but when they actually find somebody responsible and perpetrating fraud, they don't announce this to the public. They don't announce the names. They don't announce the violations. We've had to obtain this through FOIA, Freedom of Information Request. Then the USDA and the Obama administration, you know, we thought it was bad during the Bush administration. And then Mr. Obama came in and said they were going to be a more transparent administration. It's worse. These documents they release are either withheld in some cases. They're redacted so that material's blocked out. You can't really see the substance. The enforcement actions should be public, Michael. They should act as a deterrent.
Okay, when we get back, I'm going to ask you, Mark, is it possible for organic still to be organic? This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. We will be right back. Well, folks, 25 years ago, small farmers of organic agriculture and their consumers got together and gave their sales and their industry to the federal government for safekeeping. Federal government set up rules and procedures and bureaucracies to manage the whole thing, and the industry blossomed. It just went crazy, grew like the weed. And from $1 billion a year to $30 billion a year here in the United States, $105 billion a year throughout the world. Holy smokes. And yet the authority that was given to the federal government to protect those small farmers and their consumers really made it possible for those who the small farmers were trying to protect themselves against to really enter the industry by kind of making friends with the gatekeepers, those who were running the program. And so the rules get changed, and it becomes possible to do what before was not possible. And now the organic milk that you think comes from that nice, sweet cow growing and grazing in the green grass is really coming from a giant factory farm and thousands of miles away. Fair enough assessment, Mark Castle of Cornucopia Institute?
Well, remember, it could be, because there's two organic labels now. There are plenty of brands of organic milk that come from those cows that are living a happy cow life. So the reason I'm optimistic, Michael, is that if your listeners educate themselves, they can use those scorecards at cornucopia.org. and vote in the marketplace with your money. These corporations, large and small, they all want your money, and there aren't enough organic farmers to really have an influence. But our secret weapon is our customers. There are literally millions of people around this country who are passionate about the authenticity of their food, and they're willing to stand with farmers. So that's why we hope they'll go to our website, sign up, get involved. Most importantly, really spend your money wisely to protect your own families, but in turn, you're practicing economic justice, protecting the livelihoods of the true, authentic, organic practice out there.
So the original intent of the law was to provide a certainty that what you're buying is really what you're buying, but not so. It's really, we're still back to kind of square one, are we not? Wherein you have to know what you're buying, from whom you're buying it from, or it doesn't count.
It's a start to look for that organic seal. And it's really unfortunate. I run a public charity. It's unfortunate that our members have to finance this watchdog work because we're all already paying our taxes. Mr. McAvoy and the people running the National Organic Program at the USDA, their charge is to protect the integrity of that label, and they're failing on it right now. And so hopefully we can put enough marketplace pressure, because everybody listens to money, and political pressure to turn things around. And that's why we've asked Secretary Tom Vilsack to bring in new leadership, people who will reflect on the values and rigorously enforce the law and really make an example out of anyone taking advantage of consumer trust.
Well, and one hopes that they would not get bought off like everybody else gets bought off. Folks, you've been tuned into the 1016th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Mark Castle, the Cornucopia Institute up there in Cornucopia, Wisconsin. Go to the website, get educated. You can log on the forums and make your case as well at metrofarm.com, and we all thank you for joining us on this edition of What's Eating What Radio. Remember Michael Olson's second law on the food chain: the farther you go from your source of your food, the less control you have over what's in your food. Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate you joining us again. See you in 100 shows.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.